Hello and welcome to Special Ed Rising, No Parent Left Behind. I'm your host, Mark Ingracia, and I have been an active member in the field of special education for 35 years as a classroom teacher, tutor, parent trainer, consultant, and advocate. Thank you so much for joining me. In this episode, I'm speaking with Dr. Flo Rossoff, the founding director of the Life Development Center since 1976. Dr. Rossoff is a spiritual educator who has a PhD in counseling psychology, specializing in philosophical psychology. She completed her doctorate delving into authentic relating and how it connects to relationship fulfillment, and ran the first Parents Anonymous group on Long Island, New York. The Life Development Center uses a philosophical approach to psychological illness. Stay tuned for Flo and her partner, Carl Jacobs' upcoming YouTube channel called The Voice of the Life Development Center. This is a podcast for parents and caregivers of children along the spectrum of disabilities as an information hub and promoter for the advancement of people with disabilities in all areas of life. So if you're interested in learning about topics from the world of exceptional needs, educational services, health and wellness, fitness, nutrition for you and your child, and more, this is the place for you. If you like the show, please subscribe, like, comment, and tell your friends about it. And for some extra help to inform your journey, visit the resource page of my website, specialedrising.com. I would love to feature your success stories on the show, so if you'd like to contribute, please send them to my email so we can show the world what's possible. If you enjoy the podcasts, now you can tune into my YouTube channel, Special Ed Rising, for short clips from my interviews. The catalog is growing, so look for new clips in the coming days and weeks. Now, let's ride the wave of our feelings with Dr. Flo Rossoff on our way to another win. Hello, Flo. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Really good to see you, and thank you for inviting me to take this time and talk with you today. It's an honor.
It's such my pleasure. Thank you. It's such my pleasure. It's an honor for me. Right. You've been a mentor for me for over 20 years, and your work and your message surrounding feelings really freed me up, allowing me to grow with less guardrails in my life. And I'm excited to have this platform now to kind of share with the world and give back a little bit of what you've given me. And I'm excited to just let this conversation kind of go where it's going to go. I know I want to focus on feelings and we'll start with that. But before we do that, could you just give us a little bit of a background about yourself and your mission?
I'm going to make it a quick, actually, I wasn't planning on doing this, but I think it might be just for the face of just kind of meeting me as a human being. That I want to start off by saying, I'm going to give you a little childhood background, okay? First 8.5 years of my life, I lived in an orphanage. But the rest of my childhood was a very challenging one because I, you know, lived with people that were not treating me with the regard that I deserved as a human being in my birthright. So I was always very compelled to psychology and drawn actually to the adolescent. And I always wanted to work with a rebellious adolescent. And so I went on and I have a degree in education. And then I went on to get a master's in mental health counseling and a doctorate in counseling psychology. My background professionally is mainly that I am the founding director of the Life Development Center. And it was originally started when I graduated from my master's in counseling, and I just didn't quite know what to do, and I was a mother and a parent, and I had children, and I did not want to work full-time. So I decided the only thing I would have left to do is start a center for women like me who didn't know what to do, and that was the beginning of the Life Development Center. It was the first career life planning center on Long Island. It actually had a full-page write-up in the New York Times because it was the first and unique one. I also have a background Jerry Esposito started, but I ran the first Parents Anonymous group on Long Island, working with parents that were having difficulty parenting. What else? You know, I've had some... You know, I've been featured in the Ladies Home Journal and in a column called Can This Marriage Be Saved? It's like the oldest column in magazine history. And as a result of that, Barbara Walters, for those of you who know Barbara Walters and her daughter and her mother, loved this column. So when I reached 50 years old, the oldest syndicated column in magazine history, Barbara Walters decided that she wanted to get a couple and a therapist on the show that would be willing to share their journey of their relationship and how counseling intervention helped. And they chose us as the group to come on The View. So we had a 9-minute interview on The View with Barbara Walters, just on relationships. Mm-hmm. So my journey in my beginning work and my doctoral work was parenting, but it ended up to be on relationships and on authentic relationships and its direct relationship to fulfilling relationships. I've co-authored a book, Seeds of Wisdom.
Yes.
That tries to, because what happened was that I did a lot of reading in psychology and I felt like I was reading the same thing over and over again. It didn't quite satisfy me. And that's when I turned to philosophy. And if you look at our book, Seeds of Wisdom, which you must type in the name Rossoff, otherwise you'll get other books by that name. It's sandwiched. The beginning chapter and the last chapter are philosophical. And that's really been the essence of my work, that my work is sandwiched. My psychological, clinical work is sandwiched with philosophical understanding.
Thank you for sharing
that. Thank you.
The focus of this podcast is obviously helping parents. And feelings are something that I think we don't necessarily understand very well about ourselves. We misjudge our feelings or we judge our feelings. And so I want to speak to you about that. And I want to do it in terms of, I want to frame it like this. When parents learn of their child's diagnosis, it's life-altering news. If we agree, as you say, that all feelings are innocent, what message would you have for parents to help them understand that those feelings are not their choice, but something that happens to them? And in terms of them accepting their child's diagnosis through a lifetime of raising them, understanding how to understand and manage one's feelings can alter the entire experience in a more positive and healthy way.
If I can put it succinctly as I understand the question, you're saying, okay, here I am. If I'm a parent and I get the news that I'm going to have a special needs kid that's going to, you know, require my care perhaps for the rest of my life, there's going to be reactions to that. There's going to be a lot of reactions to that. They're going to be positive and negative. And, you know, so the first thing that I want to say about feelings is that what we want to try to do is give room. We actually are responsible for our feelings, but we are not to blame for them. Mm-hmm. So there's a difference between responsibility. They're mine, but I'm not to blame for them. So one of the things that we're trying to introduce a notion called inner space. Any human being that would have something given to them that they did not expect will have a myriad of feelings. And we just want to basically give room for every feeling we have. Because feelings are not actions. Feelings are not a mental process. Like sometimes you can say to yourself, okay, I'm having this feeling, but I don't want to have this feeling. Well, you know what they call that psychologically? They call it repression. And you know what repression is? We just discovered it the other day, actually. This is a new discovery. See what you think of this, Mark, or everybody. It's a form of refusal. It's that I refuse to feel this particular feeling that I'm feeling at this time. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to you that repression is the enemy of psychological health. But having said that, I do want to be sure to emphasize that what you don't want to do now is to repress your repression.
Exactly.
You know, you want to give room for everything. Just be yourself. Just give room for everything because you're not deciding how you feel.
You used to tell me, you know, you hate that feeling, so hate that you hate that feeling.
Exactly, because it's gonna come down to that whatever you feel is okay. You know, what is necessary is to give room for all your feelings. So I'm introducing a notion that we've spoken about, Mark, of inner space. That's when I have room for everything that's inside of me. you know, there is such a thing as exterior, right? If we look at the room we're in, we can name the things in the room, a table, a chair, a couch, whatever. But if we made that room a 1 foot by 1 foot room, what would happen to all the things in that chair, in that room? We wouldn't really be able to identify what's a table, what's a chair, what's a couch. Everything would be so condensed together. And so it is with the inside of us. If every time we refuse to feel what we feel, we are constricting our inner space. We are making ourselves smaller. And every time we accept what's inside of us, we're giving room for all the things that are in our emotional home. So I want to really emphasize that idea, if that makes sense to you, of giving room for all your feelings. That means everything inside, that's called inner space. And the more space I have for my feelings, what I discovered is the less likely they will come out in what I do. And really matters is what I do, not what I feel. So I want to separate, because the world has confused feelings and actions so tightly, you know, that they feel that if they feel something, they're bad. Bad and right. Good. Feelings are ethically neutral. There is no bad and good when it comes to feelings, because there's something inside of me. I mean, I can't most probably in this interview give a real breakdown, unless you want me to, of the nature of feelings, but just basically saying that they're innocent with four reasons. One is that feelings are not actions. While I can raise my right hand, if I say to everybody, raise your right hand at will, you could raise your right hand. But now if I say to you, okay, everybody at this moment, feel a feeling that you don't want to feel, you can fake it, you can pretend to be angry, but we can't really feel. You know, otherwise, life would be very easy. I'm a teenager, I'm lonely, I want a man or a woman. I think I'm going to decide to fall in love with the next person that walks in the door, and we live happily ever after. However, feelings are not something we decide, but they're rather something that happens to us. So feelings are not actions, because an action is something we do, and a feeling is something that we do not do. And feelings are not mental processes. Like, for example, if I made a loud scream on this interview, and you, let's imagine that I did that, let's say you had a reaction to that, whatever you had, would you say that you looked, you heard the loud scream, and then you decide, let me see, I think I'm going to react calmly today, or I'm going to react alarmedly today, or scared today? Or is it more like I hear a loud noise, and it happens to me that I feel startled? So right, that like feelings are not a mental process. They are an emotional reaction. They are not a mental process. So feelings are not actions. So if they're not actions, that means that I don't decide my feelings. That's the second point. And the third point about feelings is that if I don't decide my feelings, then how do I experience them? That I experience my feelings as something that happens to me. You know, I get this news and it happens to me, you know, that I feel, wow, okay, here I am. I've been given this information. What do I do with all the mixture of feelings that I have? So my advice to you is, first and foremost, give room for every feeling you have. And know that that feeling is not anything you're deciding. It's something that's happening to you. And then the last point about feeling, it's really important to find somebody that you can express that feeling to, even if it's a feeling that you feel most rejecting of. Because when you do that, when you act, if it's really true that feelings are not actions, we don't decide them, they happen to us, and that I can express them, then what can we conclude from that? If it's really true, feelings are not actions, I don't decide them, what can we conclude about feelings? And I would say that what we can conclude about feelings is right, is that we're innocent. That when it comes, I want to introduce the notion of innocence when it comes to feelings. This is a very important psychological notion with all feelings for all of us. And especially when we're given a situation that we don't, that's hard to deal with. Somebody is, a loved one is dying, we have a child that's challenged, a sick parent, whatever it is, we have a lot of feelings. So that's the first thing. Once we've done that and we can give room for those feelings, then just the very next step would be, then if I decide to be the caretaker, the parent to this child, then I want to try to do the very best I can within the acceptance of my feelings. I'm going to meet the situation. I'm going to try to respond to the needs of the child. I'm caring for someone whose limitations are not allowing them to care for themselves. But they still are developing people. They still are, first and foremost, this is not my child. This is a human being who happens to be a child, who happens to be my child, who is dealing with limitations that they did not choose. We do not choose our identity. It's a really important concept, because once we get that, then we have what we have and we deal with it the best we can. And then the third thing would be then to summon up in the face of, here I have this child that's perhaps spitting at me rather than taking the food that I'm giving them, is how can I love them the best I can? Because this is a human being and we all need love. And I'm going to love them the very best that I'm capable of loving them. And I'm going to remember that everything that I do with this human being, with this person, is a relationship between two people. And this child can maybe help you return to you the innocence of your child in the moments that you can really relate to each other and you can laugh and feel the common things that us human beings are all capable of feeling. It's a love affair. It's really like any other parent. And because in that love affair, a bonding happens that, if nourished, can do nothing but grow throughout the lifetime of this relationship. And perhaps this child can help me love more than I ever thought I was capable of loving. And the child can feel the love of me and love me back. And that we've got something really special. And that we can speak to each other. Because our relationship with ourself, which is what we're speaking about when we speak about feelings, has nothing to do with the other person. Right now,
I wanted you to actually speak about this. I wanted you to speak to this.
Okay, because everything about my feelings are not actions. I do not decide them. They happen to me. Have only to do with myself. So then I have a choice of to accept them or not accept them. You know, and that acceptance is the, once you see, it's the very first thing with everything. I accept what's inside of me. I accept my life situation. The more I can accept what's inside of me, the more I'm going to be able to accept inside what's inside of my child and the people that are in my life. And it creates, it's what makes us an adult when we really begin to see life as it is. What is a child famous for but innocence? So it's kind of, we start off innocent, but now our challenge as adults is to return to our innocence, because our society teaches us not to feel this feeling and not to have this feeling and to compare people with one another. And children, we're just not comparable. So
right. And I think that's difficult for, that's something that happens to, has to enter the picture with parents, because they're probably looking at other parents in similar situations, wondering, oh, wow, how are they doing that? And why are they able to do that? And I can't do that. All the constant self-judgment.
Exactly. So, but this is the personal challenge. The challenge is how to sustain the love in the face of a difficult situation. That's the challenge. Usually a parent automatically loves the child initially. So now the challenge is how to love the child as your life is going to be harder. And then, of course, to nurture the child. It's just a little bit harder. So it's facing the difficulty and nourishing. And how can I call in some ways you can call it my higher self or my inner saint, if you would, and accept your own limitations at the same time. So I accept my limitations of what I can do, and I also accept my child's limitations.
Because I think it's interesting because, you know, we all have this image of what we think is normal, right?
Exactly.
So, what is
exactly.
Normal?
So it's making me segue. So I sat this morning before I was going to come on the show just to think about it. And I said, my partner is Carl Jacobs, and he's a philosopher, a guy who decided that he didn't want to teach philosophy, but wanted to be a philosopher. So we have worked together over these past 50 years trying to get a philosophical understanding of the human being. So when I became a grandmother for the first time, this is a little book that Carl wrote in honor of my grandchild, Mia. And it's called Who Am I? And it's a book, it's a story about a mouse who just does not know who he is. You know, he is just so sad because he doesn't know who he is. And he goes to the mirror and he wants to know who he is. And all he sees is a reflection of a sad mouse. And he decides he's going to go out into the world. And the first thing that he meets is a snake in the garden, resting in the garden by the watering can. And he says to the snake, "Can you please tell me who I am?" And the snake says, "Of course I can tell you. You're a snake. Of course you're a snake." And the mouse is so happy. He walks away and he draws a picture of a watering can just like the snake is, until he realizes when he gets home that he doesn't slither like a snake. And he's not a snake. So he looks in the mirror again and he's sad. So he goes out again and he meets an elephant in the circus. And he says, "I'm just so sad. I don't know who I am." And the elephant, "Can you help me?" And the elephant says, "Of course, you're an elephant. Isn't everybody an elephant?" And so the mouse was so happy, runs home to his mom to tell her, and looks in the mirror and says, "But if I'm an elephant, how come I don't have a trunk?" And by the time he gets to his mirror, he's sad again. The story goes on, and finally he decides he's going to go to the wisest animal in the kingdom, which is the owl. And this is what happened. He goes to the owl, and he says, "Can you help me? I don't know who I am, and I'm going to you because you're the wisest of all animals." And the owl says, "That's a really difficult question. I'll try. Do you see that rock on the ground that's under the leaf? Would you pick up that rock?" And the mouse picks up the rock, and the owl says, "Are you that rock?" And the mouse laughs and says, "Oh, no, of course not. I have whiskers and the rock doesn't have whiskers. So you're not that rock. Can you now pick up the leaf? Are you that leaf?" "No, of course I'm not that leaf. I'm not in a tree hanging from a tree." "Now," said the owl, "yes, you're absolutely right." "Now," said the owl, "can you name all the things that you see around you?" And the mouse says, "Sure, the sky and the trees and the bird." And the owl says, "Yes." He said, "And now, are you any of those?" And he said, "No, I'm not." "If you're not any of those," the owl asked, "if you're not any of those things in the world, what does that mean?" "It means only you are you." "And the answer, Mr. Mouse, is none of these things in the world are you. Nobody is you, except you. You are unique. Your own individual whiskers, your own tail, your own self. Nobody can take the place of you." "Oh," said the mouse, "what a wonderful answer. I am nothing else and nobody else but me. Who I am is me." And the mouse ran home as fast as he could to tell his mother. He finally knew who he was.
It's beautiful.
I thought of that book because, as you inferred earlier, you know, it's so easy for people to compare themselves. Why is this parent doing this and I can't do this? Or why is this one so happy and I'm not? And why, why is my child not? None of us human beings are comparable. We really are individuals. And there is only one of us. There are billions of yous in the world, but there's only one that I am. Popeye was on the right track. I am what I am. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man. You know, there's only one of us. So there's billions of yous, but there's only one that I am, and that's me. Mm-hmm. And that relationship right. that I have with myself is going to be the key to every relationship that I have in the world around me. And it starts with, where do you go? You know, that's the question then we could ask. And where do you go to find yourself? Where do you turn? Right?
Right.
And that brings us back to the beginning of our discussion, that we return to the inside of us. You know, who am I is part of, there's something in me that is greater than me, right? I mean, there is a power greater than our own. Just in the illustration of feelings, I don't decide my feelings. I don't decide my identity. I don't decide to be born. And I don't decide when I'm going to die, you know, short of, you know, those are the four major things that make us limited as human beings. So there's something greater than our own. And if you don't think there is a power greater than our own, then I would just suggest you turn to time alone. Because people think they have time, but actually time has us.
I did want to ask just prior to jumping into the book a little bit. The idea of acceptance is one that's probably one of the greatest challenges a human being can have, right?
Right.
I know you've spoken about feelings and that. Is there any other message about acceptance that you might be able to?
Yes.
You know, I know it's a very deep.
Yeah. No. 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 No, it's a very good question, actually. You know, one of the things that I really love about this therapy is I think what you're saying is it could ask the question: what would be the starting point? How do I start accepting myself? And I love this because the starting point is the same for every one of us. It's exactly where we are. Whatever I'm feeling, wherever I am, that's where I'm going to start. And acceptance is really, it's an interesting thing because if you take a look at the spiritual leaders in the world, all sitting in different parts of the globe, they all come up with the same thing. They all say, let go, but they don't tell us how to do it. I'm suggesting that letting go means letting be. That when I let go, I let be. And that's the essence. That's the roadway. That's the pathway, you know, to psychological health, is to let ourselves be. And the more I let myself be, the more I can let those around me be. The only thing that's required and the only demand, that's how we live as adults. Adults live without demands. The child has demands, they have needs. That's how children are. But as Nietzsche said, when we transform from a child to an adult is not a child. They actually transform. We start off right as a fetus, if we take a look at it. And then we come into the world, we're in paradise, everything in the fetus is taken care of, we get our food, we get our nourishment, we're comfortable, and then splash, we're out into the world. Now we have to express our needs, and we have to get that food, and the child doesn't say, please give me some milk. The child demands that milk and needs that milk. And that's why it's really important for parents, for infants, to say yes to an infant as much as you can. Because that's going to give the infant a sense of security in the world that he's landed and that there's a loving place. Now, as the infant grows, he becomes a toddler. Now, the toddler is different than an infant. And then from a toddler, you know, I don't understand development totally, but you can see it evidently, becomes a child. The child becomes a teenager, and then a teenager becomes an adult. And in the process of going from childhood to adulthood is the process of living without demands as an adult. The only demand that we can make of another as an adult is that you treat me ethically. That's what's required to be yourself and live ethically, and you will have the healthiest relationship with yourself and with your children that you can. And then just that you treat this child like any other child. It's a love affair. This is what's given to me. Once I can accept that, let me love what's given to me the best I can. And then get all the resources that I possibly can to help me manage a difficult situation, like your resource, Mark. I think it's just wonderful what you're doing and the kind of awareness that you're trying to bring to people.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay. As I've discovered, you know, there's just so many areas that need help, and there's so many people that need help, and it seems like an impossibility. But just to have something like this, to be able to speak with you and get this kind of message out, to help people perhaps ground themselves for the experience that they're having or about to have, I feel is one of the greatest things we can do.
I want to say one other thing. I want to make the distinction between the human being and the animal.
Please.
Okay, so I'm saying that the human being is not an animal. Like if I'm an animal and I'm walking through the forest, and I'm hungry, I'm going to take somebody's baby and I'm going to chomp away and I'm going to walk down the path and be very happy. I'm not going to have, you know, but as a human being, if I eat somebody's baby, you know, the human being has something that the animal that doesn't have, and that's a conscience. So now we're faced with the challenge of surviving and living without harming the other person. That's our challenge in life. So where the animal doesn't have any ethical issues, the human being knows the difference between right and wrong. So that's why the human being is a unique being, because he knows the difference between right and wrong. And he also has a relationship with the source of himself. That's actually what philosophy says, is that if you take a look at the big picture of the human being, we have a relationship with the source of ourself. And we can say yes to what's given to us, and we can say no to what's given to us. If we say no to what's given to us, not only am I saying no to what's given to me, but I'm saying no to the source of myself. When I say yes to what's given to me, then I have a accepting relationship with the source. We're here to participate in our own development and just do the best we can. And that even though we're individual, we're all human, and we all have our limitations and our frailties, and we want to embrace that, and knowing that doing the best we can is really, there is nothing more than we can do. If anybody asks us to do the best we can, the problem is not with us, but with the request. You know,
well, their idea of the best we can, too, is going to be different from perhaps your interpretation of what the best
right,
is.
Because that's a demand. That's an expectation. And only you know what you can do. And only you in your relationship with yourself can say, I'm doing the very best I can here. And I'm innocent. Yeah. Whatever is inside of me is just all I can do. I don't choose me, but I can choose to reveal me or hide me. And to the degree that I can reveal me, whether the other person likes it or not, I will grow as a human being. And when the right person comes along in relationships, then I will have so much more to offer as I go forward. So at 82, I feel like I am getting younger because I'm growing. And I appreciate that so much.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I mean, you know.
I mean, I'm almost 82. Right.
You're right. Yeah,
you're not. I'm preparing myself, right?
What I wanted to say was, you know, we could do an entire podcast on just the idea of expectations alone. Actually, we could do one on every individual you've spoken about and have a series, you know.
We could take every chapter of the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, right.
But what I wanted to ask about was, you know, what comes up, I think, for everyone in their life is fear and managing the fear. And I know it's a feeling, so we can apply pretty much everything that you've spoken about to that. But is there anything you could talk about in terms of fear? Let's just apply it to parents in this situation of raising their child, the fear that they're going to do something wrong. And I've known parents to look back with a lot of regret, thinking that they didn't do the right things when they learn about techniques or they learn about how somebody else did something later in life. And I mean, it's so much pressure to put on yourself to be more than you are, and to fear that you're not going to be able to do the job could potentially stunt the process, I would imagine, right? So is there a message for that, the idea of fear and raising your child, and just fear, even personal fears that you have in life that might prevent you from being able to optimize what you can do?
Let's put it this way. The best thing we can do is just to be a human being with another human being, and that before our child is our child, that being is a human being, just a less developed one than us. So if I am just a real human being, the person that I'm with, the best I can with my child, then you've really done the best you can. This is not about doing. It's about being yourself and relating and loving. And then everything else is an extra. I can do this thing, but even if I make a mistake, and I can laugh at that kid and I can say, look, mommy made a mistake. She put in the orange juice and the cereal instead of the milk, you know, and it's okay. Right. And then model that, you know, look, you know, silly mommy, what, you know, whatever it is, and just making it just okay. Because the important thing is that I love you. I love you and I love us, and I'm here for you. Yeah, that's the important thing. And I'm going to be, but in terms of fear, I would say, let me emphasize this, even though it's not just about fear, but just so you have something that you can work with. So if I have a feeling such as fear, the very first thing I want to do with it, this is going to be the thing, I wish I had a better acronym, but in this case, it doesn't make a word or anything. It's A plus A plus E plus E equals I. In other words, the goal of dealing with any feeling, to deal with the feeling in a healthy way, is to integrate the feeling, not to get rid of the feeling, not to go over it, not to go under it. There's bad news and there's good news about feelings. Which do you want to hear first?
Let's go with the bad news first.
Okay. The bad news about feelings is that the way out is through. You can't go over it. You can't, if you're sad, you're going to have to go through your sadness. And that when you give yourself room to have that sadness, to have that fear, and the more you give space, I'm accepting, even if you don't know what the feeling is, if you're having a feeling that the first thing is whatever it is, I'm going to accept it. I will accept it. I don't have to figure it out, because very often when you're trying to figure out a feeling, it's a way of disconnecting yourself from the feeling. And the more that I accept the feeling, what happens is that it makes me more aware of what I'm feeling, because I've now expanded my emotional home, my interior space, and now my room is big enough to say, oh, there's my fear, there's my critic, there's my courageous one. I know what's inside of me, and that one thing at a moment becomes me. Because the problem with fear is not the fear itself. The problem with fear is when the fear controls your behavior. It's okay, the feeling itself, that's what we want to say, is not the problem. So I'm going to start off by accepting my fear. I am going to be aware of my fear. And then the third thing, which is the E, A plus A plus E, is to examine that feeling and see if that, for one reason and one reason only, just to see if that feeling is based on reality. And the opposite of reality, Mark.
Fantasy.
You remember this? You remember this?
Fantasy.
Right, right. Yes, it is spelled with a PH, actually archaically accepted in the dictionary. And it comes from the root word phantom. So then many of us, you know, because it's hard to accept, we're not at home in the universe. We're just to accept that things are going to be okay and we're okay, because anything can happen. But if we get the bigger picture that no matter what happens, we're going to have to deal with it anyway, so it's going to be okay, and it's not of our doing. Our doing is just to live our life, to be our life, and be the best self that we can be, and the best parent we can be, and part of that is accepting our frail human qualities. We're never going to be perfect. Perfection is not a standard to live up to, but an ideal to strive for. It's something that is built in. Can you hear the difference between a standard to live up to, a demand, and an ideal to strive for? Can you hear that one has sort of a struggle involved in it, in an ideal to strive for? I know I'm going to fumble and fall. That's the nature of the beast. But all I can do is say, I'm going to do the best I can. And then finally, the last E is expressing it to one other person. And when you do that, that feeling that you have, I accept it, I'm aware of it, I see that it's not reality, it's a fantasy. And one of the biggest traps with fear is the word maybe. Because when we go into the word maybe, we go into fantasy world. Those things are fantasy. So you want to ask yourself, if something is not reality and it's fantasy, how seriously do I want to take my fantasies? Or do I just want to accept them, be aware of them, examine them, share them with somebody, and just let them integrate into me like any other feeling? And I become part of the process of my own growth, which is part of the process of the growth of the universe.
That's the gold right there. Thank you for sharing that.
Does that help? Is that helpful?
It does. Okay. It does. I think, well, it's certainly something that, you talk about integration, you know, it took me so long to be able to finally integrate these ideas. When you hear about them, they sound so, you know, okay, that makes sense. but to be able to live that out and actualize right. that, internalize right. it takes a long time because it is about acceptance of who you are and where you're at.
Right.
The last question I want to ask you, you talk about challenges of growth, and growth requires change. And change means doing something different, and this process can lead to uncertainty. So what must we embrace in order to be able to grow?
Look, the point of view of the Life Development Center is that the human being can live in more than one way. I'm not as interested in giving you a particular insight. That's not the point. The point is we have a decision of how we live our life. That we exist on this, to exist means to be present in the universe. The philosophy makes a distinction between the human being and how the human being is present in the universe and how that's different from the way a rock is present in the universe or a tree is present, that there's different ways of being in the universe. So the point of view of the Life Development Center is that the human being can live in more than one way, that how do I want to live? How do I want to exist in the universe? How do I want to be in the world? Living your life involves both two relationships, a relationship with yourself and a relationship with the other. Relating to yourself and relating to the other are both halves of living your life. So we can relate to the other in more than one way. We can relate inauthentically, or we can relate authentically. Living authentically leads to growth. It requires you to live honestly with the other. Honesty is the gateway to growth. Relating authentically is both a relationship to yourself and a relationship to the other. The relationship to yourself is a relationship of letting be, and the relationship to the other is revealing who you really are. So I would say that when we address the question of growth, it's a question of being open to ourselves and understanding that we really are a process. And all I can do is reveal my real self to you and hope that you understand that I am a seeker trying to understand who I am. And hopefully speaking to a fellow seeker who understands that process or somebody who wants to grow. So sometimes I think of relationships as rather than would you be my husband or wife, would you be my growth mate? Will you be the one that I can share my real self with? And in that way, I can love another, I can have myself, they can have themselves, and we can love each other. And that's the real challenge. The very first workshops that I used to do, some of the workshops never changed, but the name changed. But I love the first name, even though I changed the name, which was called Being Ourself with Others. That's our real challenge in growing, is to live authentically. And ultimately, it comes down to living. When we live authentically, I'm living honestly. And when I'm living honestly with you, I'm living ethically with you. So it's through ethical living that we really heal. If we just do that, just that alone, we will be healed from psychological health, certainly from emotional health. There's no problem with healing from emotional health. If you can really begin, and you can say, but Flo, it's so hard. I hear all the words. It's so hard to accept. This is not a standard to live up to. This is maybe a noticing. Oh, I'm noticing right now how hard it is for me to accept myself. Because that's the beauty, as I said before, we're going to always start exactly where we are. And if where I am is my having difficulty accepting myself, then that's where we'll start. And then the journey will begin because you've stepped on the path of self-acceptance.
And that's a perfect place to end exactly where we are.
Okay.
That's a beautiful way to close out. I totally recommend the Seeds of Wisdom. Yeah, I was going to ask how people can people contact you?
It is on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and all that. If you put in Seeds of Wisdom Rossoff, R-O-S-O-F, I mean, that's just to get it up there, you will see the book, but it must have my last name. The last name, otherwise you won't be able to see that. And my email address is in the book, which is flowrossoff@gmail.com. So if you have any comments or anything and you'd like to reach me, that's perfectly fine.
Flo, do you have any social media that where people can see you or reach out to you?
Let's say it's social media in process. I do have a website, which is the Life Development Center.com. I'm just beginning the social media direction. So we have a channel, a YouTube channel, and it's called The Voice of the Life Development Center. And there's not much on that channel, but look for it because it is a work in process and it will be coming live.
Flo, is there anything, any last message you'd like to leave?
We have this thing on there, it's hip to be IP, that I'm an individual, like we spoke about in the book. There's only one that I am. Of all the billion beings in the world, there's only one that I am. And I'm also human. That means I share the same things that every other human being fears and struggles and challenges and a sense of right and wrong, a sense of caring for who we are, and that I'm a person. So first, I'm a person who is human and who's individual. And if we can keep those three factors in mind, that is really the essence of who we are before we're a parent, before we're a teacher or anything. I'm an individual human person. So my hashtag is, it's hip to be IP.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay. I can't thank you enough for taking the time today to come on the show and sharing your perspectives on feelings and everything. How to be our best human being. You've helped me so much in my life. And again, to be able to share your message with people is a joy. So thank you again. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to know you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I want to thank you again for listening to this episode, and I hope you'll join me each week to hear about topics new to you or close to your heart. I hope this podcast might inspire you to face your days more confidently, stirring a greater sense of self-love, mindfulness, an outpouring of goodness, and positive role modeling for your children while remembering to attend to the areas of your own mental, physical, and if you're inclined, spiritual health, enabling you to be all you hope to be for them. All music heard on today's show comes from Jason Shaw at audionautics.com. Remember to follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Special Ed Rising, and on my website, specialedrising.com. If you like what you're hearing, be sure to rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts, and tell your friends. You can contact me directly with questions, comments, or if you're interested in parent training, through my email, specialedrising@gmail.com, or my contact pages on Facebook or my website. Also, let me know if there's anything you'd like to learn more about, and until next time, peace and keep rising.